I want to begin our time this morning with a question. How can we be joyous in all circumstances? You know, if you're somewhat new to Christianity, you may be surprised to learn that joy in the midst of all circumstances is something that's consistently commanded throughout the Bible. In fact, we're going to get to a portion of this very letter where Paul will say, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice." And in other places like 1 Thessalonians, he'll say, "Be thankful in all circumstances." And so the question is, how can we possibly rejoice in the midst of any and all of the insane circumstances that life throws our way? Well, in our passage this morning, in Philippians 1, verses 12 to 26, we are going to see the answer to that question in a really unique way. These verses actually give us a window into sort of the psyche of a genuinely joyous person. And one of the surprising things about the Apostle Paul, he's the author of Philippians, and he's getting sort of autobiographical in these verses. And one of the things that's so surprising as you read about Paul's joy is that his joy does not seem to fit his circumstances. I mean, just think about the passage we just read. In the first paragraph, we learn that Paul is in prison. In the second paragraph, we learn that not only is Paul in prison, but he's being maligned in his imprisonment. That there's actually Christian teachers that should be like his best friends who are destroying his reputation. And then in the final paragraph, in 19 to 26, Paul starts looking toward the future. And he's not sure if the future is going to hold for him more imprisonment, death, or freedom. And in the midst of all of those circumstances, I want us to zero in for a moment on verse 18. Because verse 18 is sort of the bridge in this entire passage. In the first part of the passage, really verses 12 through 18, Paul is looking at his current circumstances and reflecting on them. And then in verses 19 to 26, he's looking ahead to his uncertain future circumstances. But verse 18 is the bridge that shows us the path to joy in the midst of all of these varied circumstances. Let's read it together. Paul says, "What then?" So he's reflecting on what's going on right now, in prison, being maligned. "What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed. And in that, I rejoice." So he's looking at his current circumstances. He's being maligned in prison, but Christ is being proclaimed and going forward. And he says, "In that, I rejoice." But now when he looks to the future, look at the end of verse 18. "Yes, and I will rejoice." As he looks to the future, he says, "I will continue rejoicing." See, it's in verse 18 that we see the secret to rejoicing in all circumstances. See, Paul is able to rejoice in any and every circumstance because the most important thing in Paul's life, namely Jesus, can be advanced in all circumstances. That's what he's saying again and again. He says, "I'm in prison, but I can rejoice in prison because Jesus can advance through my imprisonment." And he says, "I'm being maligned in prison by people who should be caring for me. But Jesus can advance even through people who preach him through impure motives. So I can rejoice in that." He looks forward and he doesn't know, will I live or will I die? Well, if I live or I die, Jesus can be advanced through both. So he rejoices. You see, the secret to joy in all circumstances is having your greatest, most important thing in your life be something that can be advanced in all circumstances. And so Paul rejoices, and we rejoice in all circumstances when the most important thing in our lives can be advanced in all circumstances. And so the big idea, I think, in this passage is, you know, the one thing I want you to see in this passage, I think, is this. What is Paul's example showing us? Big idea? Rejoice. Jesus is more important than you. Rejoice. You can rejoice in all circumstances because Jesus can advance in all circumstances. You can rejoice in all circumstances when instead of you being the most important thing to you, Jesus is the most important thing to you. So he says, rejoice. Because Jesus is more important than you. And we're going to see, Paul's going to show us specifically that we can rejoice because Jesus is more important than our comfort. We can rejoice because Jesus is more important than our reputation. And then finally, we'll see that we can rejoice because Jesus is more important than life and death. And so, since I know all of us want to be those kind of people who can rejoice in all circumstances, let's look at each of those one by one. Rejoice. Jesus is more important first than your comfort. Philippians 1, verse 12. We see Paul's perspective in the most discomforting of situations. He says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me, now we'll stop right there. We learn in verse 13 that what has happened to Paul is the horror of wrongful imprisonment. Okay, I know, like a lot of us in this room can't even sit through this service without getting a little antsy, right? Paul probably spends nearly all day, every day, chained to a Roman guard. Yet notice his perspective on the situation in verse 12. He says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, the great news about Jesus. Saying, I want you to know, brothers, here's my perspective on prison. It has really served to advance the gospel. I mean, I don't know about you, I've never been in prison, but I don't know about you. Like, I don't think that would be my first thought. And he goes, oh, this is great, because I've got news. See, the gospel is great news. It has to be spoken. So the great news that God is forgiving and adopting a people out of hell into his kingdom by grace alone, through faith alone, in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus alone. The gospel is the great news of Jesus in our place. He died our death. He rose so that we could have eternal life. Paul says, I can rejoice in prison. It's a great way for the gospel, the good news of Jesus, to advance. Well, how in the world does imprisonment advance the gospel? Verses 13 to 14, Paul's going to tell us. We'll begin again in verse 12. He says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. But then notice the next two connecting words, so that. And he's going to tell us the reasons why prison can advance the gospel, and there are two of them. He says, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. What Paul's saying is, I can rejoice in prison because it's a great atmosphere for the advance of the gospel. I have a very captive audience. That's what he's saying. He's saying, I can rejoice in prison. This dude is chained to me. If I'm not here, maybe no one else is here to preach the gospel. Rejoice, I'm in prison. All these folks who need to hear the gospel can hear it through me. So he's rejoicing. You start to wonder, has he forgotten that he's in prison? But remember, Paul is not all that significant to Paul. Jesus is very significant to Paul. Jesus can advance in prison even if Paul can't. And then there's a second reason why prison is such a great avenue for the advance of the good news of Jesus. We'll keep going in verse 14. And, so now we get a second reason, and most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. So what Paul's saying is, not only is prison a great place to have a captive audience, but my fellow Christians see that I'm willing to give up everything for the sake of the gospel, and they go, maybe I could give up some things to make the gospel known. They're getting bold. They see Paul's boldness. They go, man, maybe Jesus really did rise from the dead. Maybe he really is worth giving everything to follow. I'll make it known too, absolutely. And so Paul can rejoice in the midst of the discomfort of prison because Jesus can advance in the midst of the discomfort of prison. And Jesus is just so much more important to Paul than Paul. So let's make this personal for a moment. What discomfort are you experiencing in your life right now? What discomfort are you experiencing? I know some of you came with a friend, you're like, the sermon right now. What discomfort are you experiencing though? Some of you, you're just in the midst of like a total dead-end job. Some of you, you're in a relationship, in a marriage, that's, you're just wondering, how's this going to be redeemed? Some of you, you know, you finally reach the pinnacle of what you've been hoping for in life, whether it be in career or with money or with family, and all of a sudden, like you woke up the next morning, you still have to brush your teeth. You're like, gosh, I didn't really think it would be this way. Some of you are actually genuinely experiencing persecution. Some of you, on financially, things are just totally blowing up. Many of us in this church are in that interesting season of waiting where you're kind of always looking forward but wondering what's coming next. Whatever your discomfort is, I think, be honest with yourself. Most of the time, are most of your thoughts how to get rid of the discomfort? When you think about the discomfort of your life, and by the way, it's not wrong to, so if you got a job you don't like and you can get a new one, that's, you're free to do that. That's fine. But most of our thoughts in the midst of our discomfort are immediately, how do I get out of this? Because we think my greatest joy is found in comfort. But I've got great news for you. There's a joy available to you that is far richer and deeper than comfort. It's the joy of having God as your own Father. You see, the reason we can rejoice in all circumstances is because Jesus walked headlong into discomfort for us. He endured the agony of the cross and despised its shame so that we would not have to know and endure the agony of eternal death. In him we can have life. Jesus took on the ultimate imprisonment of death so that death could no longer have its ultimate dominion over us and we could have eternal life in him. You see, when you have Jesus crucified and resurrected for you, when you know him, then your first thought in the midst of your uncomfortable circumstances doesn't have to be escape. Instead, like Paul, it can be opportunity. How can the gospel be advanced in this? You see, when you know Jesus crucified and resurrected for you, who loves you and gave his life for you, who will never leave or forsake you, then you can look at your uncomfortable circumstances and go, Lord, I know you can advance in this. How? How can you advance through this instead of escape? It's how is this an opportunity for the gospel to advance? Let's be emboldened by Paul's example. Paul's first thought when he's in chains was not, how do I get unchained? Again, not wrong. I'm not telling you, like, if you're in a tough situation at work that it's just more spiritual to stay. That's not at all what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, let's be emboldened by Paul to first ask not how do I get unchained, but like Paul, who am I chained to? Like in the midst of these circumstances, who am I chained to that I can encourage in the gospel? Like maybe you're in a dead-end job. Who is here that I can share the great news about Jesus with? Maybe family life isn't great right now. Well, who in this family can I encourage in the good news of Jesus instead? See, what the gospel does is the gospel frees us with a greater joy. When Jesus crucified and resurrected is your greatest joy, then you don't always have to be thinking, how can I maximize my comfort? You can be thinking, how in the world can the gospel, the name of Jesus, be advanced in the midst of this discomfort? You see, many of us think, if the gospel's going to advance through me, I need to get like a PhD in Christian theology and be able to answer every objection to the Christian faith. Now, first of all, we know that's not true for two reasons. One is experience. I know a lot of people with PhDs in Christian theology that never talk about Jesus with people outside of the classroom. Secondly, we know it's not true because of verse 14. By the way, one of my greatest joys is that when I just said verse 14, all of you looked down for it. That's right. Let's get our nose in this text. What's it say? Verse 14 says, and most of the brothers, not most of the experts, not those with the PhDs. By the way, go ahead, get one. But PhD is not going to make you someone who shares the gospel. Look at verse 14. What helped these brothers share the gospel? Having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, they're much more bold to speak the word without fear. Look, you don't need to restructure your whole life in order to get more opportunities, and you don't need to become an expert in order to share the good news about Jesus. More opportunities are great, and learning is fabulous. But what's really going to get you sharing the gospel is being without fear. If fear were removed, most of us would do a lot more speaking. And Paul's saying, look, rejoice. You can rejoice in the midst of your discomfort because, like these chains, discomfort is an opportunity for the advance of Jesus, even if it's not an opportunity for the advance of you. And the great news of the gospel is you got a greater joy than your own advancement. You've got Jesus. But there's more. It's not simply comfort that Paul says pales in comparison to Jesus himself. Paul's going to go on and say, no, it's not just comfort, it's also reputation. Take a look at, we'll begin in verse 15. Rejoice. Jesus is more important, yes, than your comfort, but also than your reputation. Paul starts, some indeed preach Christ. So now you remember he had just told us that because of his example, many of the brothers, the genuine followers of Jesus, are much more bold to speak the word of the gospel without fear. Okay, remember, the gospel is news. It has to be spoken. And he says, some, so he's talking about some of those people that were emboldened, indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. See, what's going on here is that Paul is in prison for the gospel. And there are other people who preach the gospel, they do it out of goodwill. And they know, and they tell everyone, Paul's in prison because he proclaimed the gospel. But likely what's also going on here is there's another group that proclaims the pure gospel from impure motives. That's why Paul doesn't call them false teachers. He's able to rejoice because they are preaching the true gospel. But he's saying, they do it out of impure motives to puff themselves up, selfish ambition. So they preach the gospel to make a lot of themselves. And he says, to afflict me in my imprisonment, which probably means that they were Christian teachers who boasted in their own strength and power. And they said, follow me, don't follow Paul. He's in prison, he's weak. That's a sign of divine disfavor. And what does Paul say? It's really simple. Christ is proclaimed, in that I rejoice. I don't know how he says that. I'll be honest, I'll just give you a little window into me. One of the things that hurts me the most in life, probably hurts me far more than it should, is when I'm wrongfully criticized. I don't know why, but I just want so much everyone to think well of me. And it just hurts so badly when people wrongfully criticize me. And it happens. I mean, recently it's like, I just preach and these people are like, oh my goodness, like, look what he says. This is folks that aren't yet following Jesus. And they heard my preaching and were like, oh my goodness, this guy, no, he's terrible. I felt like I was just preaching the gospel. And then sometimes I'll hear of just people that absolutely love Jesus that were criticizing me behind my back. And I get all like worked up about it. Paul's like, who's Paul? I'm not all that concerned about wrongful criticism. Is Christ being proclaimed? In that I rejoice. Who cares about Paul? I love that. It's just this profound self-forgetfulness that leads to such incredible joy. You know, the reason we struggle to rejoice in all circumstances is because we are just so darn important to us. But again, this is where the miracle of the gospel comes in. The only reason you can lose your reputation joyously is because Jesus lost his reputation for you and for me. No one's ever been more maligned or misunderstood than the Lord Jesus Christ. He was wrongfully accused, wrongfully flogged and beaten, wrongfully put on trial, really, by his countrymen who should have defended him, and then wrongfully crucified by the Romans like he was some common criminal. God in the flesh, full of grace, mercy, and truth, on public display as a shameful criminal. I mean, just honestly, just the thought of it, if I didn't have to do a little more preaching, would just make me cry. He lost all of his reputation in order that we might have the eternal reputation of righteous, forgiven, declared right with God, adopted sons and daughters of the creator of the universe. When you have that eternal reputation that cannot be shaken, then who is Matt? So someone wrongfully accuses me of something, I will not be accused eternally. I will be acquitted at the judgment because of Jesus. I will be beloved by the Father forever. What am I going to freak out over someone criticizing me? Sadly, yes, but I mean, no, this is the power of the gospel. Paul is able to rejoice both in prison and in the loss of his reputation because he knows Jesus took the imprisonment of death for me. He lost his reputation for me. I have him. If he's going forward, who cares if I'm not? If the fame of his name is spreading, then if the fame of Paul's name goes nowhere, no big deal. I mean, I long for that for us. That we would be a people who are like, how can Christ's name be honored and glorified and carried forward in this ridiculous workplace, even if I'm constantly being passed over? Very practically, I think as a people, we need to, if we're going to be those who can rejoice even when we are not advancing, I think on the daily level, we need to watch what we rejoice in. You know, if all we rejoice in are our personal advances, likely when you're not personally advancing, the rejoicing is going to be done. Okay, so for example, because this is such an arresting passage to me, if I only regularly and specifically rejoice at what God is doing, how Christ is advancing through City Light Church, And I am not regularly and specifically rejoicing over how Christ is advancing through all of the gospel-preaching churches I know of in Philadelphia, what is going to happen when the gospel's not advancing as quickly through City Light? I'm going to get jealous. I'm going to call my identity into question. I'm going to wrongfully criticize people who shouldn't be criticized. Why? Because I'm just, oh my goodness, I'm insecure. What's this say about me? Me, 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 me. When you celebrate me and you isn't being celebrating, you can't rejoice. But if I'm regularly looking at all God is doing in the lives of the people around me and through all the gospel-preaching churches in Philadelphia, then, you know, on that day when City Light is not being an amazing means of advancing the gospel, I can still rejoice because Jesus is being proclaimed. Jesus is advancing. Like, what are we celebrating? Is it setting us up to be people who, even when our name is not advancing, we can rejoice because we know his advances through all circumstances? Now, finally, in verses 18 to 26, Paul will tell us, rejoice. Through his example, rejoice, because Jesus is more important not only than your comfort or your reputation, but you can rejoice because Jesus is more important than life and death. You see, in verses sort of 18, the last part, 18 through 26, Paul turns his eyes to the one thing that seems to steal our rejoicing more consistently and powerfully than anything else. And it's the future. You know, Ed Welch has this incredible book on fear called Running Scared. And he has this great line where he says that fear can exist, you know, in the past and in the present, but fear's preferred time zone is the future. That's why he says that worriers are basically false prophets. Those who always are looking into the future, predicting the worst possible outcomes, and it never turns out quite that way, at least in the details. I mean, that's why Ed Welch rightly says that worriers are like visionaries minus the optimism. You know, and that's all of us. How in the world can Paul rejoice as he looks to a future so uncertain that he's not even sure, is it going to be life or is it going to be death? Well, let's read it. At the end of verse 18, and by the way, if I don't get into enough detail for you on this part of the passage this week, fear not. We're going to come back next week. We're going to do the entire sermon on verse 21. Okay, now let's get into it. Yes, I know, like one of you is nervous about that. So glad I assuaged it. Yes, and I will rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance, as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to live, if I'm to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me. Yet which shall I choose? I cannot tell. I'm hard-pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. Paul seems pretty confident that prison is not going to be the end of the story for him. But he's not sure. It's possible that his end is, he's thinking, could just be execution. And rather than being afraid of it, notice what he says. In verse 23, he says, my desire. He's looking at death and he goes, my desire. By the way, in the Greek, it's epithumia. He's saying, my lust. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. In a non-sort of suicidal, morbid manner, Paul is saying, I lust to depart from the suffering of this body and life so that I can be present face to face with Jesus. He starts, when he says it's better, he starts heaping up Greek words as though to say, it's way, way, way better than anything you could imagine in this life to be face to face with Jesus, unhindered access to him. Yeah, I lust for that. And so he looks at death and he goes, look, Jesus is better than life. So if I live, I'll live for him. If I die, I'll get to be with him. So for me to live, it's going to be for Christ. For me, if it's death, it's going to be gain. And that's his perspective on life. My friends, there is nothing around the corner of the next life stage that's going to satisfy you like Jesus, crucified, resurrected, and with you always through the gospel. And so, live for Christ now. Embrace him, enjoy him, make much of him. There's nothing around the corner of the next life stage that's going to do it. So embrace him now. Make him your greatest joy now. Because to live is Christ and to die is gain. And when Paul looks to life and death, he has this amazing perspective. Let's finish it out in verse 24. Through 26, he says, but to remain in the flesh, meaning to remain alive, is more necessary on your account, on account of the Philippians. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith, so that in me you may have ample cause to glory in Christ Jesus because of my coming to you again. What Paul is saying is, I can rejoice in death or in life because Christ can be made much of in both. He's saying, Jesus is the one who actually lived and died for me. Jesus is the one who actually, for my progress and joy in the faith, became the author and perfecter of my faith through the cross. And so Paul is saying, Jesus is of such inestimable value that if I die, it's gain because I get to be with him. But then he says, but I'm willing to wait. He's saying, I'm willing to wait because I love him so much that I'll put off seeing him face to face so that you can know him too. That's what he's saying. He's saying, Jesus is of so much value to me that though I long to be face to face with him and be done with all this suffering, I'll suffer some more so you can have him too. Oh my gosh, I love that. This is what I want for us, City Light. I want us to be a people who go, Jesus was crucified and resurrected for me? That he has earned God's favor for me, though I never could? I'm an adopted child of God forever through the gospel? I will live for Christ. If I die, it's gain. Either way, I'm rejoicing in all circumstances. Sorry, I'm really fired up about this today. This is incredible. So we can rejoice in all circumstances because Jesus is the most important thing in our lives. And he can advance in discomfort, loss of reputation, life, and death. So let's rejoice. Jesus is way more important than us. See, rejoicing in the greatness of Jesus rather than our own greatness requires the miracle of the gospel to be washed over us again and again. And so that is why during the next three songs, as we do every week, we're going to celebrate communion or the Lord's Supper. Anytime during the next three songs, if you're a follower of Jesus, I want to invite you to come to the communion tables. You'll see two tables in front, two in back. In back, there are gluten-free options. When you tear off a piece of the bread, it's a symbol of Jesus' body that was broken so that you would not be broken eternally. When you dip it in the cup and eat it, it's that cup, the wine or the juice, is a symbol of Jesus' blood that was shed for you to seal your eternal relationship with him. When you eat the bread, drink the cup, and sing his praises over these next three songs, let that as you're eating, remember, it's a meal of remembrance, remember that Jesus was crucified and resurrected for me. I have him now. Therefore, I can rejoice in all circumstances because he's with me and advancing in all circumstances. If you're here and you're not yet a follower of Jesus, you're still kind of checking Christianity out, not sure if you want to be all in following Jesus, I want to ask you to not partake in the Lord's Supper today. This is a meal of remembrance for those who have committed themselves wholeheartedly to Jesus and trusted in his grace. If that's not you, instead of coming to the communion tables, I want to invite you to Jesus himself. I want to invite you to say to Jesus, please take my sin and give me your righteousness. I want to follow you forever by grace. And if in any area of life you're feeling like I'm struggling to rejoice in the great importance of Jesus, there are folks that will be in the back underneath the prayer signs. They'd love to pray with you for any reason. So I'll pray and we will sing the praises of the one who's been crucified and resurrected for us.